This is Samantha Glofke here with Willette Jones on Mill Street in Hudson, New York on July 1st, 2017. We're part of the Oral History Summer School Public Archive. Willette, I thought you could start with telling me a little bit about where you come from.
Where I was born.
It's up to you, wherever your story would start.
I was born in Florida. We came up here when I was 2 years old, and I was basically raised at Bliss Towers. It was just being built when we got here. We stayed there in the building until I was like 14, and then we moved to one of the surrounding houses in the building, and we stayed there until I graduated high school, age 18. That's basically it. Been in Hudson the majority of my life.
Mm-hmm. What brought your family to Hudson from Florida?
My grandfather used to come up and down for the all the mills they had here. He used to come up here and do work in different seasons, going back and forth. And my mother was at one point said, she's not doing it anymore. She liked it, Hudson, so she stayed. That's how we got here. And the rest of, well, not the rest of them. My grandfather went back, and like six of her brothers and sisters, plus it was 10 of them, and her and a couple of them stayed here.
Can you describe a day in your childhood here?
All my life growing up, my mother has been our purpose is to give than to receive. And she's a single mom, there's six of us, and she used to always tell us, before we sat down for dinner, we had to go out and find someone that probably wasn't gonna have nothing to eat, bring them home, and they ate. So we never experienced eating supper by ourselves as a family. Always been someone. But we always had to help look out for someone else. Because she used to say stuff like, if that was you, would you want someone? Or if that was one of your kids out in the streets with nothing, would you want someone to feed them? So that's how he was all our life. And I used to love when we did get to the low rise, they call it. That's what they used to call them, what they call it now. But it was more like a community setting, because you couldn't get away with nothing on the south side of it. Because by the time you make it home, your mother knew. So it's like a community raising the kids. They all looked out for each other, helped each other out. We didn't think about too much of locking doors, because it was just like a safe place. My mother was all about wanting us to know how to make it in the world, just in case she wasn't here. So at the age of 11, 12, I used to have 2 nights to cook dinner. I used to make full course meals at 12, and all my friends used to want to come over. And when it was time for me to go, hang out, my mom said, okay, go ahead, have fun. Everybody wanted to come to my house. I'm like, no, let's go somewhere. Let's go do something. Oh, let's just go down and say hi to your mom. So it was like that majority of her life. Everybody wanted to be around. So, and that's how
so your house was like a central hub for the community.
Right. And it's funny, today we was, I forgot, what city? Not even in New York, we was somewhere. And we ran into someone that says, oh, hi, how you doing? Talking and stuff. My mother said, I was talking to my mother, said, do you remember me? And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry, honey. She said, you fed me. It's one day you fed me. And I was like, oh, okay. So we hear that a lot around here, but it was just funny to hear it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And then we got older. We started going to State Street Amy Zion Church. And she started doing the soup kitchen. So that way we was able to spread. And we fed a lot of people on Saturdays. And it was so funny because even the kids and the family looked forward to Saturdays because she had all the kids doing the serving. It looked, I was weird that Saturday come, going to the soup kitchen. And when they couldn't do the soup kitchen, even the kids like, Grandma, we're not going to the soup kitchen? Well, not today. Like, oh, now what are we going to do? it was weird how she made us, I guess because she instilled that into us so young, the giving, so it was just a part of us, and when we wasn't doing it, it was weird not to do it. So.
Yeah.
Overall, I had a pretty good childhood. I loved how, I like cussing now, how it's beautified. I loved it as a kid, how there's so many places to go and different things, like right up on the corner store was Don's. You go buy sandwiches. It's like a family-owned place. Up on further up Warren Street, the Pizza Pit, the Sam's Supermarket was right there. Now all these corner stores that's breaking your pockets. There's a little supermarket right there in walking distance. And further up, it was the J.J. Newberry's, like a little Walmart. All that stuff I miss about Hudson. Now, Warren Street is a little pricey, so I really go on it too much to do anything, because basically can't afford it.
I'm actually really interested in a lot of the places that you mentioned and how the neighborhood has changed, but I really want to ask about your relationship with your mother, and how do you feel like that shaped the lens with which you see your community?
I feel it was a major impact in my life. Because when I go out and I look and see someone that might be struggling, I would be trying to figure out, what can I do? Is there anything I can do to help this person have a better day? I mean, I know I can't change the world or completely change someone's future, but if I can help someone that day, I'd be done, did my job.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, we was always told that we have a purpose, and I believe my purpose is helping people. Helping someone get to that next step. And I really, really, really do appreciate her for that. Because my new job that I had for the last 2 years, I'm thinking that my life and my home household was normal, and that's how everybody was. But I'm a community schools coordinator, and I go to a lot of different places. I see a lot of different things, and it's just heartbreaking sometimes, some of the stuff that I do witness. And I wish I could fix and can't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just knowing that one day I will be able to do more than I'm doing now. Just everything takes time.
Mm-hmm. What does an average day look like for you now?
Since this job, I never have the same day. So I get up, I go to I start at the elementary school and see if they need anything for me to do. If not, I go to the junior senior high and help out there. A lot of times I get a call, I have to take a parent to the store for something, doctor's appointments, or just basically whatever they call us for. And it was so weird because when this job came about, I didn't go for it because I always been like a very reserved person.
Mm.
A little bit afraid of failure or people to be looking down at me, so I wouldn't do it. But I recognize they call me Shell, that's my nickname. They're like, Shell, I see you doing that because it's like helping people, always being there for somebody. I see you doing it, you really should go for it. I did, and I'm very thankful that I went for it because I really do enjoy it. I can have some very long days sometimes because depending on what the need is. And on Tuesdays, it just stopped for the summer. My mom and I cook at the youth center. Every Tuesday we feed an average of 50 to 80 kids, whoever come in the door. through the community schools grant, they allowed us to do that. So, but I never know when the day is going to start. But at some point, it was the first time I got a 6 o'clock in the morning call. Miss Willette, my daughter won't get ready for school. I'm like, okay, okay. If you don't have her ready in an hour, give me a call and stuff like that. It's a hard job at times, but it's very rewarding. I wouldn't trade it. I love doing it.
Can you tell me a little more about the definition of this role?
We as a I'm a community schools coordinator. I'm a liaison between the community and the parents in the school. So a lot of times parents, from whatever experience they might have had in school, either good or bad, that they don't want to come to the school, they'll contact me and I'll go to the school and represent for them, or the other way around. If the school needs me to go to reach out to a parent that they can't get in touch with, they'll contact me and I go to the home visits. I can go to the home visit at the drop of a dime with the school. They have to do different things, so planning out, or get the safety officer, or whoever to go and do whatever. But when they call me, I call a coworker, and we just can go out.
That sounds really important. Mm-hmm. How has it shaped your kind of framework and the scope of your circle within this community?
I believe it shaped me a lot. Like I said, I was not a very outward person. I used to stay to myself. And I see, I reach out to more people. I talk to people more. I do stuff that I didn't think I would be doing because I'm on the school board now. I wouldn't have never done that before. And this is just the way I look at everything. Because I probably wouldn't have did this interview if I wouldn't have had the experience I had the last 2 years. Because I get calls from DSS. They call me to go to the school to check out stuff. Probation, all these different people I wouldn't have never probably had in contact with. People that I was kind of like growing up afraid of or thinking they way better than me. But with this job, I realized that they're just people just like I am since I've been working with them. Berkshire, a lot of different agencies that, and I guess that's part of it, is the liaison between the community and the families. I found out a lot of different programs and different things that Hudson have that I didn't know living right here until I started doing this job. It's like a lot of different agencies are doing things, but we gotta figure out a way to get more of them at the same table and realize that Hudson got a lot to offer. Just need someone to bring it together.
In which ways would you say that you've taken responsibility for being a part of that?
Question. I'm not quite sure how to word it. I just feel more or less that since it was the way it came to me, that it was meant for me to be a part of this. In which way I'm going to be a part of it, I'm not for sure, but I know I'm going to be a part of helping bridge the gaps that separating a lot of things that's going on around here. Because I loved doing stuff with kids all my life. I tried nursing aid for a month, it wasn't for me. Everybody said I'm crazy because kids is my passion. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see them learn something new or get that something that they didn't think they was going to be able to get. I love to see how the reaction, because it's so sincere. Kids act exactly the way they feel. But most adults, you have to read them. They say one thing, but think another. But kids, it wouldn't be my passion. And it's so odd, because when I was working at Head Start, I worked there for 15 years. I worked 1 year. I had two nieces, a nephew, and a cousin in the same classroom. And they called me Auntie Shell. And one of the supervisors had came to me and said, you know, the rules here is they have to call you Miss Willette. I said, yeah, I do understand that. And she said, so you don't have to tell them that, but if they call you that, you can't get upset. I said, okay. I'm not worried about it because of our upbringing. Respect is number one. And so I know they wasn't going to call me Auntie, I mean, Miss Willette. They had the whole class calling me Miss Willette, calling me Auntie Shell. Parents and all was calling me Auntie Shell before the year was over. I was like, okay. But yeah, it's just, I feel I'm a people person. I'm just happy that I'm embracing it now. It's because it was a little shaky at first coming up in my first crush. He made me feel like I wasn't worthy of anything, and I wasn't this, and he was telling me stuff all the time. So I believed it for a long time. But now I really am glad I'm reaching out to people and part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you have to navigate a lot of difficult situations in your day-to-day.
Yeah.
How do you feel that that foundation of respect being a priority has kind of given you a way to navigate those situations?
I feel that everyone has a voice. I can't come in your house and tell you what you need. I feel that if you tell me, then we can work at it together and get to the point we need. If I don't respect these people, no matter what I believe, it don't matter. I need to respect them enough to know what they feel they need. Because everybody's not the same. You can look at someone's situation like wondering why they doing this or why that, but that might be what they need, but what helped them get to their day. So I feel that if I respect them, they respect me. And a couple times further respect, I got a call from DSS, and it was just a little case, but they're saying the families said they're not welcome back there, but if you say Miss Willette, we'll let her in. And I felt very gratified when I heard that coming from them. I'm like, oh, okay. So I feel respect is very important.
I was actually wondering, you had mentioned a while back about the fact that you've had encounters with people who maybe knew you before, who you didn't feel respected you, and how you've had to kind of renegotiated those relationships since being in this position. Can you describe maybe like a specific breakthrough that you've had or a moment when you realized that you had changed?
I feel I had changed. I realized that people are more just like me. A family had asked me to sit in with them at court. I went into the court and just sat down and was waiting. And while I was in there, the judge kept peeking around, looking at me. Like, okay, why is this man looking at me like this? And the officer came over and said, did you sign in? I said, oh no, I don't have a case. I'm just here as support for a family. And he was like, oh, okay. And then a little while later, while the judge was talking to a client up there, he said, wait a minute. Excuse me, what is your name? I said, Willette Jones. And he said, oh, do I know you? I'm like, I'm not for sure. I never stood in front of you. Actually, I never stood in front of no judge. And he said, oh, okay. And he kept going what he was doing. I said, I do know you. I guess he taught my daughter, he was a coach for one of my daughters playing volleyball. And he said, yes, I do know you. You're Autumn's mother. I'm like, yeah, I'm Autumn's mother. But then I remember I'd seen this man from volleyball 101 times. He never was as friendly as he was. And he said, so what are you doing here? And I told him, he said, oh, okay, because, yeah, I thought it was kind of odd that you were sitting here in the court because I had never, ever imagined you and stuff, something like being here. I said, okay, no. So he was working his case and talking to me, and everyone's looking at me. I'm like, oh, okay, no. I'm still a little shy with people looking at me, so I might need to go outside for a little while. Yeah, but and then when I go to different places, people just say, oh, I'll go ahead and introduce myself. Oh, I know you. You go ahead. I'm like, oh, it's just, it's weird. It feels kind of good at times, but it's just a little weird that me, this very quiet, stayed to myself most of my life, person that people in higher positions or higher hockey in this area knows me. It's just, seems weird.
Actually, want to go back to what you said about being in a relationship that was not so good, and the way that that affected you for so long from what sounds like an early time.
Yes.
I guess I just feel that that's an important subject that a lot of people can suffer from, and I wondered if you had anything more to say on how that affected you.
Yeah, it affected me really, really bad. It's so weird because I'm very close in that family, and most of the time I did not want them to know what was going on, so I didn't talk to them too much. Because I know with my four brothers, it wouldn't have been a good outcome. Mm-hmm. And so he used to tell me that if I didn't, he asked me to marry him and be with him, and I was like, no, we're young, like thinking it was a joke or whatever. And my first sexual encounter was not what I wanted it to be, and so after then he started telling me how I was a dirty person, nobody was gonna want me, and I ended up pregnant from that first time, and he just was a very not a nice person. The stuff he used to say to me just had me feeling like I wasn't worth nothing. Even though I thank God for my family, because I had them at one point always lifting me up, because I was down. Mm-hmm. You said that, I was a ugly, dirty person that nobody was gonna want. So I believed them. I stayed to myself. It took me to probably 10th grade to reach out to get friends, because I didn't know what people thought about me. I felt like everywhere I went, people knew what was happening, what had happened, and they talked about me so bad. Being young and having my first child, back then that was very much frowned upon, not like now. And I felt so bad that I disappointed my mother, and that I should have went to her when I was going through, and I didn't. So now, I do everything I could to push my daughters. I, when the kids come to me in my office in school, they come to me, I'll say hi, beautiful. I call them gorgeous, just to try to lift their spirits, especially if I know their family, and not knowing this job probably didn't eat today or whatever. Just try to do everything I can to lift their spirits, knowing how strong my family is. He was able to break me. Just imagine somebody coming from a different family.
And maybe having gone through those things, you know, it sounds like you feel that you have maybe kind of a special, or just a skill set that now gives you a little perspective into kind of understanding what a kid or, you know, the people that you encounter might be going through. Do you feel that that has shaped your relationship to your daughter?
Yeah, I do. Because I do anything for to protect them, for them not to go through half the stuff I went through. So I always try to encourage them to the point, I think at some point, a little too much, I guess, because I had said I was going to run for supervisor in the second ward, and I was told that someone was saying, oh, I like her a lot, but her daughters are stuck up. I'm like, okay. Maybe I should have pulled back a little bit, but I put in their head that they're beautiful. Don't let nobody step over them, no matter what nobody say, they're beautiful. You can get what you want to if you try hard enough. You can achieve whatever you want to if you try hard enough. So they've been hearing that from the time the doctor put them in my arms, because I didn't want them to settle for nothing. So I was like, okay, well, I don't know if I pushed them too far, because it's not like I don't feel they stuck up, but I guess that's the perception of people that sees about them, think about them.
Can you talk a little about the way having daughters, how do you see kind of your daughters as a reflection of what happens in this community, specifically with women and girls?
I don't know. My daughters, it was very sheltered a little bit, I would say, because I never really did too much of anything. I stayed home a lot. I just worked at Head Start, came back home. I never really, as an adult, hung out or really had any friends in that matter. And I guess it's coming from childhood, because I never really reached out. And then after I started working in this job, that's when I started reaching out and going out, meeting new people and things like that. So I don't really know how that affected my daughters coming up. My oldest one, she's like, was pulled back like I am. And I'm trying to tell her to let loose. You got to be, to get happiness, you're going to have to grab it. Because a lot of times it's not just going to come to you. And I know that's probably because she was my baby when I was still so down on myself. But the other two is very outgoing and people person. They like to go to different things and do different things, the younger two. And Victoria, she's the only one, she'll talk about every now and then how she used to like how when we used to live down the street, you can just go outside and don't have to worry about nothing and just have fun into the dark, to the light. Because I used to, my mother rule that she used to use on us. If the light, she just said, if the light catch you, I'm going to catch you when you get in this house. So make it before the lights go off. And you didn't have to worry, because it's all in that little circle down there. And my daughters, they was raised, they was like right in the low rise, they was the row houses on Columbia Street, but it was like right there across the street from Skyline Court. So it still was like the same little community niche for them coming up. But I hope they came out okay.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you think the community has changed? Hudson in general has changed since that time when you felt kind of certain safety in that home region?
It changed. It had changed a lot. You way back then, you used to at least seen everybody. You probably didn't know everybody by name, but you knew their face. You knew of them. Now, you don't know anyone. It's like it's a whole new place because everyone that basically grew up around here is leaving because you can't afford to live here anymore. My father had told us probably about 20 years ago, if you're planning on staying in Hudson, you might need to get some property. It'd be harder to put you out if you have property. And we didn't know what he was talking about, but it's come to pass. Almost my the girlfriend, she ended up leaving. If you give up an apartment that you had for a while, that's it. You got to leave because you can't afford nothing else. Because the house, the jobs don't pay enough for you to afford the houses. And it's just crazy to me. From when I moved out of my parents' home, I was young and just moving from apartment to apartment just because I could, to now. Those same apartments, before I got my house, I was apartment hunting. And go look at the apartments. They run down. People shouldn't be living in them. And they're charging $1,500 for an apartment that I used to live in years ago for $400. But nothing has changed in the apartment. I just think that's crazy. Yeah, I went to this meeting about housing in Hudson that I would love to be a part of. They had said that Hudson was trying to pass this law, or not law, whatever it is, that if someone moved out of a house, it has to be inspected by the city before the landlord can rent it out again. I know that's not happening, and I wish it was. And if something like that happened, I would love to be a part of it. I wouldn't mind going inspecting the houses, because when I lived on Carroll Street, the boiler almost blew up. We called the they came, inspect, everybody came. But before all that happened, I had called the people about the mold. They didn't do nothing. And they told that landlord, do not try to put a band-aid on this. Do not try to fix it. Replace it. He did not. I was blessed with my home from Habitat. After we built the house, I moved probably a year later. Another family moved into that house. House caught on fire. Had they went back and inspected, after they told them not to do it, the house wouldn't have burned up, and then people wouldn't have lost everything. So I'm like, if I do get on the county supervisors, even if I don't, I'm gonna be a part of that Hudson House and whatever that inspection thing they was talking about trying to get up and going. So that's why I go to those meetings to see what it's about, because I feel that's important. I just felt so bad for that family. I mean, it hit me hard, like it was my fault. Because I didn't go back. I was like, oh, I got my blessing and just moved on. Didn't even think about it no more. But I'm thinking, well, since the police was there, the fire marshal was there, they all said this needs to be replaced, not fixed. That it was gonna be fixed. I guess the inspector didn't go back and check it either. So there's a lot of apartments that need a lot of love to them. When I first was moving out, they had Section 8 was strict about the stuff that they would let people move into. Not anymore. I can't believe some of the stuff that get approved. I'm like, wow. I don't know.
How do these issues in the community shape your idea for running for a supervisor position?
They had a strong impact. I feel that I have a more voice if I have a team behind me to help me with some of the issues that's going on around here, especially with housing. And that Hudson is no longer child friendly to me. When you go somewhere, like we go visit in Albany, that big old park that got the swimming pool, the sprinklers, all the different things for kids to do, are different things going around. What is it for Hudson kids to do? Nothing. They started this park over here, but it just stopped. I don't know why. And
I just want to point out that you're actually gesturing to a park right to the right-hand side of your sister-in-law's house.
Yes.
And when we pulled up, it looked like a big, there's a big lot there, but mm-hmm. I didn't actually catch what else is out there.
They put the swing sets in the gazebo, and that's it. But I was told that's supposed to be a really nice park with different things. It's supposed to have sprinklers, different, but no, I don't know what happened, why they stopped. But I would love to find out. Because if the kids don't have nothing to do, they get in trouble. They create something to do. I need it. They need to do a little bit more. And I used to like when Linda Musman owned a place on Warren Street. She used to have those movie nights for families. That was really nice. That don't happen anymore. Just find something. That beautiful waterfront park down there. Something for families to do throughout the summer, especially when they're out of school and there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So they get into all type of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Are there any ways in which you feel that there are programs and resources that are available to only certain people?
I honestly don't know if it is or not. I can't honestly answer that because I'm not for sure.
Yeah.
I just wanted to find out if it is.
Yeah. What are some ways in which you envision a future with like the supervising role in mind?
Hello.
Shh. I plan on definitely doing more, try to do something for the Hudson youth, whatever that may be, and being more involved in the housing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do love Hudson, and I would love for the people that I know to stay around instead of everyone slowly leaving. And my niece today, she's like, oh my goodness, I'm trying to find somewhere to go in Hudson, but it looked like I have to go to Catskill. And it's funny that people say that because when we go to Florida to visit, people heard of Catskill because of Mike Tyson, but they had never heard of Hudson. But you can't live in Hudson because you don't got enough money. So it's just I don't know. It's crazy. I don't know. I would love to, for it. I like the improvements that's happened. I love the beautiful buildings. But I just wish instead of leaving us behind, they bring us along with the improvement. And then I feel that'd be a better Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pushing us out.
Kind of want to round up by asking you if there's anything. I feel like Hudson has a lot of rich history and there's a lot of kind of stories told about Hudson. Is there any thing about Hudson that you think is not known enough? Anything like special about Hudson or kind of undiscovered about Hudson?
Besides the sense of community, I found out when I was building my house, how it's a lot of people in Hudson that comes together in a time of need. It's amazing. From all walks of life, it was. So I had to put in 300 hours before I can get the keys, and doctors and lawyers, teachers, people I never met that just wanna, that got big hearts, that's looking to help people do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just come up. People come together for the. Just put it out there. People come together. They will be there to help you as much as they can, and that's one thing I appreciate about Hudson. up.
Speaking of people who come out to support you, we're asking everyone, is there anybody that you think should be part of a public archive? If, you know, these are just voices from Hudson, nobody's really to be excluded, but is there somebody that you would be really excited about seeing in the archive? A story that hasn't been told, or someone that you really value?
I would have said my mother, but someone called her today. She just told me that she's doing this.
I was gonna say
mother. Yeah, I said, Mom, really? That's funny because I think it's the same thing I'm doing. She said, oh, so I should do it. I said, yeah, Mom, you should do it. I'm not sure what it's about, but
I love the idea of being side by side in the archive. That's great.
Yeah, I was talking to her and my father, Edward Cross. Yeah, he'll be a good one because he was born and raised here, and he hasn't went past Second Ward.
Mm.
He moved out a little bit, and then always ended up back down there. And he's the Second Ward supervisor right now.
Well, I was going to end, but now I feel like I have to ask how your father's... You hadn't talked about your father a lot. He's obviously a leader in the community. How has that shaped? How has that shaped you?
It had a strong impact because he's another one. When I first said I was thinking about running for the school board, he was like, "Really? You can do it." He said, "Oh, you definitely can do it." I was like, "Oh, well, maybe not. I'm just talking." Because lately I've been the type of person, if I want to know about something, I get in it. And I think it's the best way to find out. Because you can hear this, you can hear that. But to know, I have to see for myself. So I ran and got all and won. So then when I told him, because they switched the wards, I don't know why, but they switched the wards, so he's no longer able to be Second Ward Supervisor after this term is up. That's why I'm running for it. And I told him, you know what? I think I'm going to run for Second Ward Supervisor. And he was like, and you can do it. And I know you can do it. So let me know what I need to do to support you.
That's great.
And I don't know if you can find nobody too much love Hudson more than him. So that's all he talked about. My mother has said, my parents are getting old. And I might want to go back to Florida to be with them. And he said, the furthest I'm moving is Front Street. The first south I'm going is Front Street. So she changed her mind, Chris. She said, okay, well, we just visit often.
We are coming up on an hour, which is about the time frame that we usually suggest so that we don't get fatigued from interviewing. So we'll end on that note. I want to thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
It's been lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.